This is the Ethanol Report. I'm speaking with Randall Doyle, who is the general manager and CEO of Minnesota-based Alcorn Clean Fuel, who was just elected chairman of the board for the Renewable Fuels Association. And Randy, first of all, tell me a little bit about your ethanol facility in Claremont, Minnesota.
Our plant name is Alcorn Clean Fuel. We were started running in 1996 and have been successfully operating ever since. We were built as a 10 million gallon per year plant, and we've expanded it a few times to get it up to 50 million gallons per year now.
And you were just elected the chairman of the Renewable Fuels Association. And Randy, just tell me a little bit about why you want to be in this position.
Well, Cindy, I'm not sure that I want to be, but it feels a little bit more like you've got a target on your back. But I think it's very important for our industry to speak out and to make sure that people understand what's going on. We've been, rather maligned over the last few years with misinformation, with people who don't understand how vital the ethanol industry is, how much it has improved, how much efficiency we've gained, and exactly what effect we have on the U.S. economy. And that's a part of the story that I want to get out.
Tell me what you see as the biggest challenges right now facing the ethanol industry.
There are probably a couple of things that I would point to. First of all, one is that while Congress passed a renewable fuel standard with a clear pattern of what was going to happen, what the projected goals would be, EPA seems to have decided to change the law on their own. I don't think that they can do that, but they're talking about issuing a change to the required blending levels. And, it's not about the number for our industry, Cindy. It's about the rationale behind it. What's the reason that EPA wants to make changes? EPA is authorized under the law to reduce the required volumes in case there's no supply or a lack of supply. That's not the case for ethanol. We have plenty of supply. We're producing more than the law would require. We're exporting some, and frankly, right now we're building inventory because EPA is sending signals that are telling the oil industry they don't have to adapt. They don't have to put in the infrastructure to utilize higher level blends like E15 or greater. It seems like EPA is buying the oil industry's line that we're stuck at a blend wall and we can't go any farther. There is another part there, and that would have to do with transportation. One of the issues that all of us in agriculture are facing, and I put ethanol in that camp, is lack of attention from the railroads. Lack of attention. Heck, we feel like redhead stepchildren, almost. The railroads have taken on a whole lot of new business. They're shuttling unit trains of crude. It's a very lucrative thing for them, and I get that. But they've kind of pushed aside all of their old customers, us included, and it makes it very difficult for us to get our products to market. We saw this happen last winter. It was blamed on snowfall, and we didn't really buy that. I mean, snow's fallen in Canada before, right? But we see that the issue really is about the fact that railroads do not have the number of locomotives that they need, nor the crews to run those locomotives to be able to handle the amount of freight that they're taking on. And that's the issue that needs to be addressed. So we're continuing to work with different folks to try to make sure that's evident to our legislators and to the railroads.
What do you see as the bright spots for the ethanol industry, your opportunities going forward?
Well, I think one of the brightest spots that I see has to do with the new CAFE standards. The government changed the standards for corporate average fuel economy on the fleets. And as that ratchets up, automakers are saying they can't get there with the way gasoline is built today. Gasoline is not a single substance. It's a whole mixed mash of different chemicals that has certain characteristics. And what automakers are saying is, those characteristics that we accept today won't work to get us the fuel economy that we need in the future. What they want to do is build cars with smaller, lighter engines, higher compression, that utilize higher octane fuel. And the reason that that's exciting to me is because ethanol is the cheapest source of octane out there really high octane and very clean burning, and some of the folks in the auto industry are coming back and telling us that they're going to be shooting for somewhere between 20 and 30% levels of ethanol in the fuel to be able to get the fuel economy that they want down the road. And that, to me, is a really neat bright spot. The other has to do with the fact that the rest of the world is waking up to the effect that ethanol can have on reducing air pollution, extending oil supplies, you know, cheaper sources of energy. And we're seeing Southeast Asia and the Pacific Rim start to adopt blending programs that will require greater volumes of ethanol. And the United States is the cheapest source of ethanol out there today. So we stand ready to fill that. I think that gives us some things to look forward to.
That's really the theme of the upcoming 20th anniversary National Ethanol Conference, Going Global. So exports is really a great opportunity for the ethanol industry then, right?
Well, yes, we believe it is. And again, we're seeing that around the world. You know, it's unfortunate that Europe decided that somehow, because we were producing ethanol cheaper, we were competing unfairly and slapped a large tariff on U.S. ethanol. We had, you know, a significant volume going to Europe. But, you know, we're finding ethanol being exported to places that I never imagined, like the Middle East. That just surprises the heck out of me to find out that some of the Arab world is actually using ethanol for the same reasons that we do in the U.S., you know, because of the octane, because of the clean burning characteristics.
So what about the exports of distillers' grains, the co-product? Are you seeing that grow as well?
Cindy, we were seeing large growth in distillers' exports, particularly to China, until the ban on some of the, I think it's Syngenta product that wasn't approved, came about, and that's basically knocked us out of the Chinese market. We'll be back in again at some point. You know, this stuff will be resolved. But China is a very large growth market for us, and as is, you know, the rest of Southeast Asia and the world. Distillers' grains is a good source of protein for livestock feed, and it's being recognized and as gaining favor around the world. We're seeing more and more export.
Are there any concerns that the transportation issues that we're having here in the United States and in Canada might impact your ability to export both DDGs and also ethanol?
Well, yes, Cindy. That's why rail is one of our top priorities. It's already impacting us. We're seeing truck markets, you know, local markets being depressed in value because we can't get product out to further end users. Makes it more difficult for us to get product to points of export or, frankly, to shuttle our ethanol around the U.S. where it needs to go. We've got a large demand for ethanol around the U.S. We're 10% of the gasoline supply. That means that it's being burned all over the place, but primarily the coast. That's where most of our population lives. That's where most of our gasoline is consumed. And we depend on rail to get our product from the Midwest to the coast. That's the interference with rail and the logistic problems that we have there are actually, I would say, causing some pain for the folks on the coast in getting the product that they need.
Well, I know that RFA has been really involved in the railway transportation issue as part of the RFA board. Are you feeling like the railroads are being responsive to the concerns? Because it seems like a lot of the issues involve, as you said, more personnel, upgrading perhaps rail cars and that kind of thing. Are you seeing some response from the railroads?
We're hearing that they're addressing the issue. That's what we're being told. Yeah, I think it was the BN that said they were made a commitment to buying more locomotives and adding crew. I haven't heard that emphatically said from some of the other railroads out there, and it is concerning. You know, I know that a part of their concern has to lie with how long will they have this new customer, Bakken and crude, to shuttle around. And frankly, I believe they're trying to make hay while the sun shines in that regard, because their thought has to be, when pipelines get built, that rail business goes away and they don't want to build up only to have to get rid of power and crews a few years down the road. And so they're, you know, I understand that their hesitation as well, but frankly, it's kind of frustrating that folks who've been here, we've been good customers, we've been shipping by rail and thought we had a great relationship, suddenly find ourselves not getting the service that we were accustomed to. We've had plants this last winter and some this summer who've had to slow down or shut down because the railroad wasn't servicing their cars. They weren't picking the cars up, and the plants were full of product. You know, we've had plants that were waiting for cars to be returned, where we might have seen a unit train a week pulled out of a plant. We've had plants that waited 2 or 3 or 4 weeks for the railroad to come, and the plants didn't have the number of cars or the siding to park them on to handle that kind of backlog. So it's been a big frustration. I know that same frustration is felt not just by the ethanol industry, but by farmers all around the U.S. I've listened to several of them up here in the upper Midwest who've told me horror stories about how they couldn't get their products to market because the railroads just weren't servicing the elevators and moving the corn and the soybeans on.
Speaking of that, we have a record crop in the fields that's being harvested. You said the combines are running in your area, and there's only going to be more to move. Tell me how the crop looks in your area and how harvest is going there.
Well, you know, we had here in our local area, we had some issues with a very late spring and a lot of rainfall. And so we've got a little bit of reduction in yield from that. But folks that I've been talking to out on the combines, sounds pretty decent. You know, I'm hearing on some of the corn, 200 bushels an acre. And on the soybeans, they're busting the bins, going 60 or better. That's really phenomenal. Overall, I would say the condition of the crop looks pretty good. We're behind. We could have used a little more warm weather here to finish off the crop, but I guess we'll have to use a little additional heat supplied by our dryers to do what Mother Nature wouldn't do for us.
Thank you very much, Randy. I'm Cindy Zimmerman with the Ethanol Report.